Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome back. 5 o'clock hour, 5:07. Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk, as we take you into the weekend. And we're doing so in record territory today. We broke the record 101 degrees officially at the airport this afternoon. So I teased this a little bit yesterday, so I have a raccoon story to share. And then we're going to get Ron the Bat Guy, who specializes in these things. So this is a person who is a friend of mine, and she had to work right now. So we recorded something earlier, and Ron's on the line, and we're going to kind of have him hear this story. But what's interesting about it is I think people would relate with this, but there's the crux of this story has to do with a tax from her family, if you will, because of something involved here.
Okay. All right?
Now just listen to the details. This, we'll call her Rhonda.
All right. Well, are we protecting the innocent?
We're protecting the innocent, not her real name.
All right, then.
And I said, when did this begin?
Hearing knocking on my walls. It started in December. I kept hearing knocking on my walls. And my mom had just passed away. And I made a joke and said, oh, it's Grandma Marie just, you know,
right.
saying hello to us. You know, and then then we heard the crying in about March, so we figured it was babies. And I called a pest control person out, and they said that there's definitely raccoons. They ripped up my two vents that go out on top of my roof and told me that it's going to be about $700 to $1,400 to remove them. Or I could just wait till June or July, and they'll leave because of the heat.
And so you chose to wait.
Yes.
Okay. What? Just out of curiosity, what happened between December and March? Were they making a bunch of noise?
Yeah, you could hear her climbing up the wall and then climbing up. My roof's probably about 30 foot in my kitchen.
Oh,
it's a peaked roof. And we would hear her go out at night and get food. And we'd hear the babies crying during the day and just kind of like scratching on the walls.
Okay. So then you started deciding, okay, this is it. You're going to trap them, right?
Yep.
So tell me what happened there.
So my friend gave me a little trap. I didn't know that it was too small, but I stayed up literally almost all night, a couple nights in a row, watching her. She would go into the small trap, and she would take the food, and her body was so big that when she backed out of the cage, that's when it shut the cage, so she couldn't be trapped in it.
Oh, wow.
So I went to Home Depot, and I bought the biggest cage that they had, and I baited it that night, and I caught her that night. I guess it was on the 6th of June.
Okay, but the issue now is that the babies are, they're still there. They're not there. I know today you said you cut down a tree because you saw them coming in with the tree, but you now have family members upset with you because of the babies, right?
Yes, because they thought that I made these baby raccoons orphans now.
Right.
But I've read a lot about raccoons and their habitat and what they do and when they get in your attic and stuff. When they're the size of a baby house kitten, they're old enough to be on their own. And these obviously are bigger than a house cat right now. They're not full grown, but they were born probably in March.
Hey, look, you don't have to explain it to me, but you got to explain it to your family members who I think are being unfair and giving you a hard time right now. And then you told me that you cut a tree down today, right?
Yes, I cut down a whole big plum tree in my backyard that was probably about 45 or 50 years old because I heard them up on the roof. And so I went outside and I watched what they did. And they went and they grabbed the plums and then they would go inside back into my ceiling. And I was like, oh, no, these raccoons are not going to get the best of me. This tree's going down today, so I cut it down.
All right, so at this moment, do you think you have the problem solved or you're not sure?
They don't have any more free food that they could just easily access. So I'm going to set the trap tonight and see if I could get the baby raccoons to come down and get in the trap.
All right, I'm going to get some advice here from my friend Ron Scheller, who does this for a living, and I will let you know what he says, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Now, an update on that.
Oh,
because
Rhonda.
I recorded that yesterday, and she trapped three. I was showing you the video. She trapped three last night. Since this is an audio medium, I always like to have songs that go along with things.
Well, sure.
Listen to this.
Rocky, the rock and roll raccoon.
This is about the worst song that I could find. Rocky the Raccoon. I just kind of Googled something. And
Mark, you do what you can.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Ron, you like that as a little theme song here? Going into our raccoon
segment.
Yeah, Ron Scheller, the bat guy with us, he's the expert on all this. I should point out that this person is a single mother, and, you know, the finances were rather significant. That's why she didn't say, hey, I'm going to pay you $1,400. She did it on her own. So on the trapping front, did she do the right thing? What did you hear there that was accurate or inaccurate, or what would you say, Ron?
Well, the first thing, whenever you notice them in there in December, get rid of them in December.
Like a bomb or something like that? What would you do that with? Small hand grenade?
Oh, that works, but you can cause damage with a hand grenade. It's really common for them to get in the houses during the winter, first of all, for a nice, cozy place to semi-hibernate. And then in the springtime, they're going to have young. Like she said, they usually have them in March, sometimes April, sometimes even earlier. The issue is always when there's a female with little ones. I see this happen so often. People will, the DIYers are going to go buy a trap at the farm supply place. They see a raccoon going up the downspout or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. That's the bad thing. She cut a tree down and they could just go right up the side of your siding, corner channels, your downspout, conduits. Once they use the structure, there's no stopping them from getting on it. You have to raccoon proof those vents. I mean, there's ways to keep them out, but they can tear the fascia boards right off. Jeez. They tear the soffit off the house. But the mistake people make, they don't think about young ones, and they'll set a cage trap, catch a raccoon. It's like, oh, good, we're successful. And depending where they're at, you guys can relocate them. We haven't been able to relocate raccoons in Illinois since 1999 because they're so overpopulated. But
wait, clarify that. What does that mean? So if you trap one, because she told me that you had to go like 6 or 7 miles from the house, but you can't do what's the
difference? We have to kill them and bury them.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, really? Ron.
What? 22 years now on raccoons, and it hasn't slowed the population down a bit.
I got you.
Oh, my gosh.
Skunks and raccoons have to be put down. Everything else, groundhogs, chipmunks, squirrels, everything else gets relocated.
Okay. Ron, I have a question. What is the most common access point for a raccoon in one's house?
Typically, it's where the soffit meets the shingles, like at a dormer corner, a roof line transition, wherever the soffit comes down and meets that angled roof shingle. They get their little claws up inside there. I say hands because they truly are. And they just pull the soffit panel out. They'll grab the fascia and pull the nails right out of the fascia because they're like a little bear.
Holy cow.
And if they want to get in a house, they're going to go in it. But the thing about, like we were talking about catching the big one, and they take it out somewhere and they turn it loose. And about 2 weeks later, they have giant maggots crawling out of the baseboard trims because – there were young ones in there, and they didn't know it. And then all of a sudden, their house smells so bad they can't stay there. So you end up cutting holes in your wall to get these decaying raccoon kits out, which is nasty. The guys who do it all the time, like myself, we will go right away. We can tell if there's little ones. We'll sometimes put a game cam at the entry hole. But if you catch a female and you can tell she's lactating, you know right then you have to find those young, whether they're in the attic or in a crawl space, whatever, and you have to get them out of there at that point. There are some people who will wait until they're big enough to leave and then try to raccoon proof the house. And 99% of the time next year in the spring or winter, your house is going to get destroyed, because if that female is still around, that's her den site, and she's just going to tear that house apart to get back in, no matter how good you fix that point. She's going to go somewhere else.
But what if it's a deer? So in that, in this case, she believes that she did trap the mom, and now I think she trapped the kids last night, too. If you do take them about 7 miles away, is that...
That's probably adequate. And like she said, the young ones, most of them at this point, you know, can sustain themselves. They the females are out in the daytime with them, teaching them how to hunt and forage and stuff. So people call me all the time, oh, I think I have a sick raccoon and a bunch of babies. I'm like, no, she's just showing them, you know, how to get along.
Right.
But like when we could still relocate them here in Illinois, the state required us to go a minimum of 10 miles. They did studies on them. They did like a 6-year study on raccoons with radio collars and stuff. It's really interesting. And it's actually what made them have to decide to not be able to release them anymore. But, they said we had to go 10 miles minimum, and we could not go any farther than 40 with the chances of taking a potentially diseased animal into a healthy population and wiping out an entire population somewhere else.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But then when I look at it both ways, it's like, okay, they won't let us move them anymore because they're so overpopulated. They're up to about 70 per square mile in every city and town. And they're in everybody's houses. They're just tearing gable vents right off the places because they're – the den trees, there's no vacancies. So whatever they can find to get in, they're going in. And it's just an interesting thing that they extended the winter fur season by a month because they want to take out about an extra 100,000. I say take out being, you know, PC-wise here. And it's
removed
not working
from
because
the planet.
The fur
removed
value
from
is
the
just,
planet, yes, yes.
Yeah, and the fur value is not bringing anything. So all the raccoon hunters are just leaving their dogs sit in the houses. They're not taking them out, and the trappers aren't going out. So, you know, it just blows my mind that I hear people, oh, they're in town because there's nowhere left for them. We've destroyed their habitat. It's like they have so much easier a lifetime in the city than in the country.
Yeah.
They've adapted is what they've done. They haven't been abandoned or ran out of anywhere. The wooded areas are at maximum capacity, and they're driven into towns. And then they find out, my gosh, I'd rather, you know, eat this dog food out of this bowl at night and live in this guy's attic instead of chasing a minnow down a creek somewhere.
It's just,
they're lazy like we are.
So what would you say? Because the thing about that story that sort of caught my interest is she's seriously having people in her family give her a lot of grief because she was trying to get rid of the babies, or that she got rid of the mother and the babies were still in there.
It's the times we live in, man. I just did a house, a local lake house, and you've been to this area with me before. People were gone for the winter, came home, raccoons got in there in the winter, tore all the insulation out of the north side of the house to build a nest out of.
Oh my.
The pipes froze, all the pipes broke in the house. Ugh. They come home in April to $20,000 worth of house damage.
Oh my.
The water was pouring out the ceiling, down the walls, ruined the ceilings, walls, floors. The raccoons got into the kitchen, tore the doors off some of the cabinets to get to the goodies. I mean, they just demolished this house. And it's the people who have never experienced what raccoons do. I get yelled at all the time. I'll go set up a, you know, real nice subdivision in Edwardsville or something, and it's like people see me putting traps on the rooftop, and they're like, oh, my gosh, where do they have squirrels? I'm like, no, they have raccoons. And they always ask, well, you know, can you take them out? And, you know, I don't lie to people. I just tell them straight up, nope, that's not legal.
Yeah.
So they get all mad, and then the neighborhood, you know, wants to organize a march and tell everybody how bad I am. I'm like, man, I'm following state law. I'm not, you know, I'm not making these laws up. I have to follow them. And there's a reason behind it. It's very scientific, and they seem to ignore that word a lot of times.
People don't want to think with their brains.
Right. Yes. I mean, so these creatures can live behind walls and in the attic. Is it mainly in the attic that they go?
Yeah, they'll travel the walls. Like, they believe it or not, like a
15
or 18-pound raccoon can go in like a foundation vent, and if it finds a space between two wall studs, like if they had cut it open for conduit or something, people will be sitting in their living room, and they say they can hear them going up the wall, like behind the television.
She heard them.
And then,
she heard them climbing in there the whole
and
winter.
And she decided to let them stay over the winter. I think I would have called Ron 2 seconds later.
Right. Well, again, there were financial considerations
here. Well, I get that, too. I get that, too. Poor thing.
And, I mean, there are so many different, you know, ideas on how this should all be handled. And, I mean, Illinois has been doing this stuff since 1990, this wildlife control. Very, very highly regulated and all kinds of rules we have to follow. Missouri is absolutely not even close to that. It's pretty much if you have a pickup truck and two cages, you can do whatever
land
you
of the
want.
Free, land of the free.
It is.
This is,
you know,
truly the land of the free.
You know,
you're the land of Lincoln. We're the land of the free here in
I
Missouri.
Know, yeah. And you know me. I mean, I'm a small government or maybe no government guy.
Right.
So, you know, I have to survive by these rules anyway. And it's just an interesting concept that the way people will just react because they're looking at how cute they are.
Yeah,
and they
emotional.
Absolutely
well,
are.
Uncle Ted always says to me, because the deer hunting, what, do you only want to kill the, you know, the ugly animals?
Oh,
right?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Hey, Ron, I've got just a random question. What is the biggest issue you see in summers in this area? What is the big...
It's bats right
is
now.
Is it bats?
Oh, bats. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
Well, that was my next question. So you, because we tried to get hold of him yesterday, he's real busy with all these bat jobs right now. And this is the time where you're allowed to go in and keep them from coming back. And you put the tubes up. He described that the last time. But that's your busy season right now for bats, right?
Well, that actually ended May 15th.
Oh, okay.
We're in that blackout period now. They have young ones right now.
Oh.
And,
So a hand grenade.
Yeah.
No, you can't do that, right? That's illegal.
Right. But
see, here's the irony here. You can't kill the bats, right? They're protected.
They're good.
Right, exactly.
Well, they're pooping in your house, though, Sue.
Listen, you can remove that. Well, Ron went over this with them, but we like they eat mosquitoes and other
things.
Can
they eat ticks? Do they eat ticks?
Yes.
Because I need some bats
Wait,
to eat
do
some
they,
ticks.
Ron, do they eat ticks?
No.
Oh, sorry.
No.
All right. Darn it.
But, and you know, I have to take this even farther now that, you know, you kind of got me grinning about that. You said, oh, my gosh, you can't kill the bats. And that's absolutely true. They're protected, not endangered. We have one endangered species here, but we have like 13 that aren't. There's a ton of them, but they're still protected because of their environmental importance. But you can't kill a bat when you see it. But if you find a bat outside that's stranded, you can't take it to a rehabber because in Illinois it's illegal for them to take bats because they're considered a rabies vector. Okay, so depending on what state website you go to, you either save the bats or kill the bats. It's like, wait a minute.
Wow.
or I should say you can't kill the bats, but you can't save the bats. That's the irony there.
All right, so then because this is that protected period, what happens if I'm a person who I was, that person, you know, 12 years ago who called me and said, I have bats in my house, what can you do? What are you allowed to do during this period?
A little bit of interior sealing will often pacify folks. Like if they're getting a bat in the house, maybe once every week they get one flying around the bedroom or something. And you can go find the cracks internally and isolate the bats into the attic. Like if there's, you know, a square hole cut where your dryer vent goes through the ceiling and there's a space there, you'll sense the air conditioning running. They'll follow that cool air thinking it's outside air and they end up in the house flying around. You can, you know, put little rags or anything. They can't gnaw through anything. They're not like a rodent. So you can close off the interior holes to keep them into that attic until the young ones are all flying. Then you just evict the whole colony and everybody's happy.
Oh, okay.
But like an old Victorian home that's got like pocket doors and stuff, and you shine the flashlight and you can see the underside of the attic 2.5 stories up from the dining area. It's just hopeless on those giant old homes. They're balloon construction, so there's no fire breaks. The bats can travel top to bottom. They come in the attic. They go all the way down, end up in the basement roosting in the daytime sometimes. So in those cases, I had a lady yesterday move out. She moved in with her mom until I can rent them out in August. She will not stay in this house. And I told her, I said, hey, I can put a door sweep. They're coming under the door from the attic. I was, you know,
oh, my
coming
gosh.
Down. And I said, I can put a door sweep there and keep the bats up there. They're just fine. There's only like 60. To me, that's not many. And to her,
60's not many?
Did that woman just pass out when you said that? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Oh, she was like hysterical when I got there. And you know, my first job is to calm them down to the point where they'll listen to what
I'm telling you got to write a book, because he's got so
seriously.
Many stories of people that, you know, are reacting in unique ways. You should definitely keep it. I know you do post a lot of things on Facebook, which is kind of funny. Hey, did you hear my I'm being attacked on a regular basis and have for years by barn swallows at my house. Did you hear me go off on that whole deal?
A little bit.
Well,
I've been, like I say, on the rooftops a lot.
They've been pooping on my front porch and trying to build nests, and then my wife is actually like the family members of the girl who's got the raccoons. You can't take that nest down. They have babies. So once the nest is built, but I did everything I could to prevent the nest, and somebody said, well, put an owl on your front porch. Well, that did a hell of a lot of no good whatsoever. And then they found a spot under the like right above the downspout in the front of the house. So it wasn't really on the front porch. But what I do now, this is kind of a nightly thing for me, because these things, they come in and they, you know, they think I'm threatening the nest, which, by the way, I'm not going to do anything to it. But I like to go out there and wave my arms a little bit and get them all riled up. And then they come in and dive bomb me. It's fun. It's a little hobby of mine.
Well, they don't harm anything, right? They're blue and kind of pretty.
They poop
it's just
like
a mess
everywhere.
Oh, well.
I would say, you know, you may try. You can look this up. You can make little nest perches, like on the maybe around the corner from the front porch, and actually entice them to go to the side where maybe they poop in the ground.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah.
I've done that at my house. We had one trying to build right under our patio, and I was out there putting nails and little ledges up. I went crazy because I wanted him there, not in front of our door. But, you know, of all people, I've, you know, catered to these critters no matter what. It's just one of those things. I think they're such a cool bird. I wanted them here.
Yeah, they're awesome.
You
they're not awesome when they're attacking me violently, Sue. I just want to tell you right now.
Move around to the side of the house and let them nest there. They're good luck.
They eat mosquitoes, too. Yeah, I think they do. Mm-hmm. All right, Ron. Well, I appreciate your advice on all things wildlife here this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. We depend on you. Everything else going well? I know you're busy. This is the, you know, this is the guy, unfortunately, you never take a break. You're like working nonstop, aren't you, especially this time?
I know. I always say my weekend is typically December and January. Other than that, it's 7 days a week. It's just
that
7 days a week.
Pretty much sums it up. All right. Well, listen, thanks for the advice. You took a half an hour off here at least for some chatting on the radio. Ron Scheller, the bat guy. Thank you, Ron. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mark.
I will see you.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
U.S. Open, Torrey Pines in San Diego. Founded by the Germans. If you know that. Will Ferrell told me that years ago. Dan Reardon, no relation with us. And you are virtually credentialed for this one, right, Dan?
I am virtually credentialed. In fact, I'm inside the window right now. And there's a lot of great information available. I have not taken advantage, but literally I could participate in the player interviews after they're complete with their rounds.
And here we go, and I don't know if it stands this way right now, a guy, and I follow professional golf, I've never heard of at the top of the leaderboard, at least earlier this afternoon.
Well,
Russell Brand, he's a fine actor. Is that who's at the top of the leaderboard?
Well, you're not alone in this knowledge or lack of knowledge of Richard Bland. He's from England. He's 48 years old. And just 2 or 3 weeks ago, for the first time in his life, he won an event on the European Tour. So, I mean, he's been playing in anonymity for decades. But he shot 4-67 today. He's 5-under for the championship. Currently has a 1-stroke lead over Oosthuizen, Henley, and Cabrera-Bello. So he's at least the flavor of the day. We'll see what the weekend brings.
Dan, you said on Twitter earlier today, you said it's possible this week that the field that misses the cut at the U.S. Open has more marquee names in the field that does make the cut. It looks like we're kind of heading that way still, right?
It depends on whether the number stays at 4 or drops to 3. If it drops to 3, if it goes up to 4, it's going to scoop up a lot of big names. But if it stays at 3, you're going to see some people drop by the wayside, people like Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth, and people that you would have anticipated would be around on the weekend, not just around, but contending in this championship. And I think what we're seeing, Mark, is a golf course that nobody can break out on. You know, 67 has been the best score we've seen. They've only seen a couple of those. In fact, Bubba Watson shot that today. But it doesn't look like we're going to see on any other 4 days somebody get hot and pull away. You know, I thought maybe today at 200 par at the start of the round, Brooks Koepka would be the guy because he's sort of proven in the circumstance, but he's still at 200. He's been up and down through the round. So I think we're sort of locked into this is going to be a very tight affair, maybe not exciting in the sense of great shots, but it's probably going to be a very tight affair for the next couple of days.
It doesn't seem out of the question, even if you're sitting plus one right now, where, you know, a couple of the big names are, or maybe even plus two, if the leader's at minus five and the leader's a guy that no one's ever heard of and he might fall, who knows, maybe he runs away with this tournament. But there are things that could happen here that could make this very attainable to get on the leaderboard tomorrow, make a run at this.
Absolutely. In fact, I'd go so far as to extend that. If Richard Bland is the leader at 5-under and we discount the fact that he's going to win the championship, then the leader is probably 4 or 3-under. I'd say if you make the cut at 3, if that's where the cut line falls, a 6-shot margin with two days to play, I think anybody within 6 of the lead certainly has to think they're going to be a factor. And we do know this is a golf course where people back up. And it may not just be back up from one round to the next, but they back up within the round. I think going into the day, there were only two players who had played a round without a bogey on their card. And Cabrera-Bello was one of those two, and he's had a he's had a bogey today. So it's a very different Open. Actually, it's a very old-fashioned U.S. Open in that, you know, the rough is a factor, putting it in play is a factor. The greens are a little bit firm and have a little bit of pace to them. It's a little reminiscent of what we used to see in Open Championships perhaps 5-10 years ago.
So I had Brian Katrick on, you probably know that from PGA Radio yesterday, talking about the Brooks and DeChambeau thing. And then even after that discussion, and his position is, you know, people were talking about this pairing because there's been tension behind the scenes. What if the U.S. Open puts Brooksy with DeChambeau? Well, it wasn't going to happen, and even if it did happen, you wouldn't have gotten fireworks. However, you still have, I guess Bryson was kind of harassing, pimping him a little bit yesterday. I don't know if they're both having fun with this. They truly don't like each other. They've admitted that, right?
I think that's fair to say. And in fairness to DeChambeau, he's borne the brunt of this because he's had the spectators who have heckled him, calling him Brooksy all the time. So for him to retaliate is sort of leveling the playing field. And I'm not justifying either one, and I'm not rooting for either one in the situation. But he's the one that's been taking the abuse as this feud has sort of kept bubbling on the surface.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it doesn't get too nasty, I kind of like it. You have this in other sports, and you know, if it doesn't go what Katrick was saying, and I think even if they were paired, they were going to be professional, and they would have gone on with their rounds. Everything would have been fine. But a little tension behind the scenes that's exposed every now and again in sports, a little fun for the fans.
And we've seen this before. You know, Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed were great teammates in the Ryder Cup until they went to France, and Jordan said, I would prefer to play with Justin Thomas because he and I grew up together, and all of a sudden the two of them were at odds with each other, and they resolved their differences. I think the feuding is fine as long as the spectators stay out of it. But yep, when the spectators intervene, and there have been a couple of shouts at Brooksy in the middle of his backswing for DeChambeau, then I think it has gone beyond what it's supposed to be.
I heard even Phil kind of got frustrated with some of the people that aren't turned. I'm with Phil, too, and I'm glad that they allow you to take the pictures, but you got to silence your phones, and some of the folks weren't silencing their phones.
Yeah, that's been... You know, the only place now that is no longer allowed is
Masters,
at
right?
The Masters at Augusta National. By the way, Mickelson is trying to rally to make it to the weekend. He's 3 over for the championship, so he's inside the cut line. If it's 4, he's on the cut line. If it's 3, he just needs to hold it together. He's played better today than yesterday. You know, this is his hometown. He doesn't like the golf course, but he certainly would like to be playing golf on the weekend in San Diego rather than watching golf.
I keep an eye on Matthew Wolf, who is sitting at -2 for the tournament, but I watched quite a bit of his round yesterday. Seems to be in pretty good form.
8 birdies in the round yesterday, and he shot 71, and he's playing well today. The other name that I think is surprising on the leaderboard, but bears watching, is Bubba Watson. You know, Bubba is sitting at 3 under par, so he's within 2 of the lead, shot 67 today. And he's really played extremely well. And he said afterwards, he said, you know, I'm probably not the kind of guy that wins a U.S. Open because I curve the ball so many times. But he said, I feel sort of comfortable here. He's actually won on the golf course when they played the tour stop. He's probably, for me, the most surprising name on the board. And then the one that everybody is sort of counting on is that John Rahm at 3 under is going to make that step up the ladder. And,
not impossible. I mean, they're both sitting. Bubba Watson and John Rahm could certainly be a final pairing on Sunday. Dan Reardon with some U.S. Open coverage this afternoon. I'm excited because of the Pacific Coast time. We get a little primetime coverage tonight and through the weekend as well. So, Dan, enjoy the virtual coverage as a media member, and enjoy the weekend overall. Thank you for giving us the latest.
Enjoy it, Mark.
That's Dan Reardon, our golf go-to expert, no relation, on 97.1 FM Talk. Sir Paul, 79 years old today.
Oh, wow.
I can't believe he's almost 80.
That's crazy.
And
he looks good.
He still seems to have a lot of energy. How long has it been? Has it been 5 years now since the show at Busch Stadium?
I think at least, if not more than that.
I went to the one in Chicago. I didn't go to the one here.
I'm going to look it up real quick.
Seen him twice. First time I saw him was at the Bradley Center in Milwaukee, and that show blew me away. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. The show at Busch Stadium I did attend, but I was way far back, and I'm not a big fan of the outdoor shows in stadiums,
yeah,
unless you're
it doesn't
super
sound
close.
As great.
Yeah, it's hard to feel the energy. I mean, I was sitting on the first base side way far back from the stage. So
it was 5 years.
Five years
ago?
Look at you, Mark.
August 13th, 2016. played a good mix of a lot of Beatles songs.
You'd have to think that there's a tour plan still for Paul McCartney. He seems to have enough energy to get out. And his band is phenomenal. He's had those guys with him for a long, long time. So since we're on the topic of music, we can do number one songs this day in history.
Good. I
something
love this.
That we do. Mm-hmm. Let's go back here to 1971.
I feel the earth move under my feet. I feel
Carole King, a little Tapestry. Never did see the show The Fox.
I didn't either.
The Carole King show, what's that thing called?
I don't think it ever happened. I think it was because my parents had tickets, but I think it got canceled due to COVID.
Well, I think they had one previously, though.
Oh, yeah, it might have been there before.
What's the one they show every now and then on Channel 9? That's the one I'm... Ooh! 71? Dang.
1971, 50 years ago, is number one.
Oh, and this is actually a double A-side with, something else. Whatever the,
Double A side, cool.
With You've Got a Friend or something else?
Yes, maybe. What was that?
Hold on. By the way, that was my sign language final. You've Got a Friend in college.
Your sign language?
Yeah, I took a class in sign language and I signed.
It's too late.
The final was you had to sign to a song.
And can you still do it?
You've Got a Friend. No.
Okay.
Well, and they are both classified as the number one song.
Oh, that's really cool.
But I put I Feel the Earth Move in there because it's got a bit more.
Okay, there you go. Tapestry, right?
Yes, Tapestry. Classic.
Oh, remember this, Sue?
Listen.
Can you name this?
Do you want to know a secret?
Andrew, are you familiar with this at all?
I had no idea what it was.
So this
Carl
is,
explained it
this
to
was
me.
This weird deal from the early 80s, Stars on 45, where they did this montage thing.
Let me whisper in your
ear. This was the first time I really...
Say the words you love to hear.
Looking it up because I don't remember the details. Stars
Knocked
on 45,
out.
Sue, is a Dutch novelty pop
You're
act.
You're kidding me. I had no idea.
I didn't know they were Dutch either. Popular through Europe and the United States in 1981. The group, see, later shortened its name to Stars On in the U.S. Huh? While in the U.K. and the Ireland, they were known as Star Sound, a.k.a. Star Sound. The band, which consisted solely of studio session musicians under the direction of Jaap Edermont. Oh, that was a guy that was in Golden Earring. So what they did was just a bunch of medley songs that people had heard over and over, and they montaged them.
Knocked off Betty Davis eyes.
Kind of a that is significant though. After 30 weeks at number one, Stars on 45. Terrible song from Paul Abdul was number one in 1991.
She's a really good dancer. Not so much on the singing.
And I did miss her for years on American Idol when she was all medicated and everything. Those were fine times for Paula. The number one song in 2001 was apparently Ron DeSantis. Here he is.
We have to do
Oh, no, wait. That was just out of order there just a little bit. So let's see. Which one is it?
That
is
one
it
must not have made it in. Well, you didn't
Where did 2001 go?
Now, you didn't miss anything. I must have been an error in the uploading. We didn't miss anything, though, because it's still Lady Marmalade.
Oh, still.
But where is that? I don't even see that.
I think it
that.
Just didn't end up getting into the
All right, well,
the
you're going to have to sing it for me, then.
Lady Marmalade.
No, please
don't.
No.
I don't. Oh, no, that's the Gitchy Gitchy Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
I remember it now. I can play it off the computer if you want.
I still think that Ron DeSantis was number one in 2001. In 2010, or 2011, Rolling in the Deep with Adele. It's still kind of weird that that song is that old already. And then, Butter, number one, BTS.
Andrew. Do it.
I have a song that,
he's
hitting the high notes here.
These guys are great. I love them.
You know what? I should have had you pull this. So I have a list of songs that I, have a mix and title, which is my music service.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago, my friend who I was visiting had, I think it was like Hits 1, which is one of the stations on Sirius XM.
Mm-hmm.
He played it, like we were there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Friday and Saturday, all day at the pool, Hits 1. So you're hearing all these songs, many of which I had heard, but on those, we used to call them CHR stations, hit music stations. They do current sometimes every, I'm convinced that sometimes every half hour.
Oh,
used to be like in music radio, 2 hours was like the maximum or the minimum on a hot record. But I think they do it even faster than that.
You sure? Every half an hour?
Well, I might be wrong, but it's at least every hour. So there's this, I didn't pull it. And maybe I'm a little embarrassed, but it's a song. I'll listen to it on the way home. The Jonas Brothers song.
Which one?
Which
Leave You, what's it called? I don't know. Pull it up here, Andrew. We'll play it on the way out.
I like the Jonas Brothers.
Is it Sucker? That's the one I remember.
Leave Before You Love Me.
Okay.
No,
I'm unfamiliar.
Before You Love Me. That is the, and I can't stop listening to that song. It's like over and over. I'm listening to that. Here, you want to know my top three right now?
Yes.
Sweet But Psycho, Ava Max. Mm.
I heard.
The new John Mayer, which I played the other day.
Oh, that was good.
That was last week.
Yeah, that was good.
The Jonas Brothers. By the way, the Jonas Brothers thing is with Marshmello.
And yes, Alex.
So do you know
right
about
here.
Marshmello, Sue?
I've heard Marshmello.
Well, he's a producer. I don't even know what his real name is. But the gimmick is he wears a
marshmallow
suit, right?
Oh,
he's got
that's
this big.
Yeah,
I didn't
he
realize.
Looks a bit
but
silly.
That yeah. dude makes so much money.
He hit that Stinger PC up. We can play this on the
Here's
way
the
out.
Oh, good.
Brothers,
okay,
yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. It's a catchy song. It's got a nice beat, and you can dance to it. Here.
I've
I think
heard
I can
this.
Hit the post.
I like this.
And I did hit the post.
I like this. I heard this. I like this a lot.
I think that's Nick started up there.
He's the talented one.
But I honestly, when I heard this song a couple weeks ago, I didn't like it. And then I kept hearing it, and now I'm stuck on it. And that's what happens with these songs. It kind of gets stuck
you.
In your head. There it is, the Jonas Brothers. I actually have a song that I will do as a go-to, but we'll do that after we do this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I hate to do this, but this is really good. I like to keep it a little light, but this guy comes in late in the day. He is an African-American father. We've seen this quite often now, and this guy sums up critical race theory better than I've heard anyone sum it up.
You going to purposely tell a white kid? Oh, the black people are all down and suppressed. How do I have two medical degrees if I'm sitting here oppressed? How do I get, first of all, time up. We've only got 5 minutes now. 5 minutes. No dad in the house. Work my way through college. Sat there and hustled my butt off to get through college. You gonna tell me somebody that looked like all y'all white folks kept me from doing that? Are you serious? Not one white person ever came to me and said, well, son, you're never gonna be able to get nowhere because you know the black people. But guess what? What's sickening about this whole thing is what y'all doing right now is already something I do in my community right now to speak out against stuff because black folks are getting told by other black folks, oh, you know you ain't gonna be able to do nothing out there in the world because them white folks ain't gonna let you get nowhere. Oh, you know you're not gonna be able to do it here because you know, the white man gonna keep you down. Well, how did I get where I am right now if some white man kept me down? How am I now directing over folks that look just like you guys in this room right now? How? What kept me down? What oppressed me? I work for myself from off the streets to where I am right now. You gonna sit here and tell me this lie of critical race theory? Of this the reason why black folks can't get ahead because of white folks? Are you kidding me?
I love it. That guy's name is Ty Smith.
His
name is Ty Smith. Apparently, he does some radio in Illinois.
He has a conservative radio show called Cancel This in Central Illinois.
I like him.
Decatur area.
I like him. Okay, there was a song out many years ago by The Killers.
I saw the ending.
Called Dustland Fairy Tale, and I liked it quite a bit. Bruce Springsteen influenced Brandon Flowers and The Killers significantly. There have been lots of Springsteen references, and Bruce got to know Brandon Flowers a little bit, texted him and says, I want to do Dustland. I want to do a remake of Dustland. So that's what they did.
Dustland Fairy Tale beginning, or just another white trash can.
And then Mr. Springsteen gets involved. My wife is a big Bruce fan, and she loves The Killers, and she heard this song, and she said, I don't know if I'm into it. And
it.
I said, okay, but here's what I'll say.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, if you're a fan, watch the video, because I think the video really puts this into excellent context, and they do a great job. So she agreed with me, by the way. She watched the video last night, and then she couldn't get it out of her hands. Songs do grow on
That's
you occasionally.
True.
We'll go out with Dustland, the remake by The Killers, Brandon Flowers, Bruce Springsteen. Have a great weekend.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.